I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Justin Jasnewski. He started as an analyst or an auditor with ServuRx and eventually rose up to become the CEO. Took a little break in the middle to get busted 4.0 at the Kellogg School of Business. But why it matters is ServuRx is something called a pharmacy benefit manager, or short, they call them PBMs. And it's one of those things in the system that's driving up the cost of company-sponsored healthcare. And it can sound complicated, but it doesn't need to be. And so what we're going to be talking about today is just understanding what that is, why that's driving up the cost of healthcare, and what business owners can do to help get that cost under control. And hopefully we'll learn a few other things about Justin. He apparently has done a triathlon and has a background in cheese. So tune in. Justin, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Craig.
All right, let's start with the cheese. What's the deal with the cheese?
So for the first 5 years of my life, I lived upstairs from my grandparents' cheese store, West Dallas Cheese and Sausage. And instead of going to after-school daycare, we were put to work in the cheese store, my brothers and I, and my job was to destroy carbon copy receipts because there were a few thousand of them every week. So wow. A lot of experience around cheese. I know way more about cheese than I ever wanted to. And it's probably the most Wisconsin thing about me.
I'm wondering if we're going to reach a point where nobody knows what a carbon copy is.
They just see it as that's what the letters CC mean on your email.
Yeah. There's a VC here in Austin who talks about, when you're doing sales, when you have the yes, get the signature and shut up. And he has this, quit talking because you can talk your way out of a sale. And he's like, his line is, "All right, looks like we have a deal now. Please sign here. Press hard. Bottom copy is yours. Please use my pen." And I just wonder how many people even know what we're talking about. Bottom copy is yours.
Right. Yeah. I mean, when I first started at ServU, we still used paper PTO slips. So the pink sheet was mine. And then the yellow sheet went to HR. And then the white sheet went to your manager.
Wow. So that's wild. So you grew up in Wisconsin. And how did you get down to Chicago?
So somewhat on a whim, I decided to apply to the Kellogg School of Management. I wasn't necessarily super after getting an MBA, but somebody from Kellogg reached out, managed to convince me that it was a good idea and that it's something that I should do. I did about a year in their part-time program where I would do my regular job during the day and then get in the car and drive down to Chicago and be in class all night and then drive back to Milwaukee. And after a year of doing that, I decided enough was enough, decided to go full time and then move down to Chicago where I met my wife in the program and been there ever since.
Wow. Well, cool. Does it feel, my perception is that there's a little bit of a culture clash between Wisconsin and Chicago. Not necessarily Wisconsin and Illinois, but it just seems, does it feel weird or is Chicago your kind of place?
It's larger than Milwaukee for sure. It's a little less blue collar here, but it's when I cross the cheddar curtain, it's not a total culture shock. They're alike in more ways than they're different. Now, if I were to fly to New York, it would be materially different, I feel like. But I think Milwaukee and Chicago share common roots, and they're alike in more ways than they're different.
That makes sense. And the triathlon, what triathlon did you do?
So it was, I don't even remember the name of it. It was a locally put together triathlon. They did have timers, but it wasn't an official Ironman event or anything. And it was actually a club at Kellogg. It was basically there. They put a sign up in the main building saying, "You can run a triathlon. Yes, you go to this meeting, and we'll tell you how." Went to the meeting, and they basically said, "Here's what the schedule is. Here's what you have to do. Here's what you have to commit to. Here's when the event is. Are you in or are you out?" And I was in. So that's how I got to doing a triathlon. Now, I don't think I'm going to win any medals, but the completion was what was important to me. Maybe later on in life, when I have a little more free time, like that's ever going to happen, I can try to go for a better time, but I'm just happy to have it done.
Yeah. No, and that's, one thing that I think is common in great leaders and people who accomplish a lot is they have a habit of doing things that are really hard. They have a habit of doing things that are just hard. And it's there's actually some science behind that. There's a part of the brain called the anterior mid-cingulate cortex. And it's the one part of the brain that will actually grow. And it regulates emotions. It's the reward center of the brain. It does a lot of things, but the only way you can stimulate that is to do things that make you uncomfortable. And so I think that's cool. Good for you for doing that. And I think COVID wrecked my lungs, so no hopes of me doing a try. I'm still working up to where I can do a full hour of Camp Gladiator. So I don't think triathlons are in my future. But anyway, well, let's talk a little bit about PBMs, pharmacy benefit managers. And one of the problems with healthcare, it's incredibly complex and it's confusing. I first heard somebody talking about PBMs on Joe Rogan's podcast. And I had the benefit of, hitting replay and listening, and it still confused me. So, what is a pharmacy benefit manager?
So you are not alone in being confused about what a pharmacy benefit manager is. My introduction to ServU was through a recruiter, and I will quote what this recruiter said. "I don't know what these guys do. I don't really know what a pharmacy benefit manager is. I think it's insurance, but not really. It has to do with pharmacy, but it doesn't look like they dispense drugs. But it'll be a great fit for you." Typically, something a recruiter would say. And that was actually my first introduction to PBM, was through this recruiter, because I was a retail manager at Target and I just wanted anywhere but here was my job search criteria. And so PBMs sit at the critical crossroads of three different parties. First is the employer that's paying the bills. Second is the drug manufacturers that manufacture the pills. And the pharmacies, the ones that actually dispense the pills. Now, when you sit at the crossroads of those three parties, you can leverage them against each other, right? So, in theory, PBM should always be working in the interests of the employer group, because that's who's paying your bills as a PBM. But, drug manufacturers have their own incentives, and drug manufacturers will also pay PBMs in exchange for favorable placement of their products, right? So there's cash coming in from manufacturers, cash coming in from plan sponsors, and the cash is going out to the pharmacies. So oftentimes, when you see various news and testimonials of people that are critical of PBMs, it's plan sponsors that think they're paying too much, pharmacies that think they're being paid too little, and manufacturers that feel like they're having to pay these big rebate dollars in order to get their drugs covered. So there's a lot of legitimate reasons why PBMs are in the crosshairs, and they're everyone's favorite villain of the healthcare system right now. And I think that reputation is fairly well earned, but it's because they're at the crossroads of these three critical parties, and they have the ability to either drive costs up or down, depending on how they handle being kind of the traffic cop at those three intersections.
What was the concept that originally, or the desire, the goal that really originated this concept of a PBM?
So I think it was probably 50 years ago. It was in the 70s. It was just like a cool add-on, kind of like vision benefits or like pet insurance is now. It was just kind of an add-on that you could throw onto your health plan because drugs were fairly inexpensive. And for the most part, you just went to a pharmacy, picked up your drug, that was that. But the average cost of a drug was, a couple percentage points of what it is now. And it started as kind of an IT product. So it was really technology that kicked off PBMs as they are today. And there were a few, because I don't know if you know this, if you've ever submitted a medical claim, usually takes anywhere from 6 weeks to 6 months to get your bill. And then you
Yeah.
know what your copay is, you know what the insurance paid, you paid. There's this reconciliation. A lot of times it's wrong. You got to go back a bunch of times. Pharmacy is different in that if you get a response any slower than 3 seconds from the claims processing system, something is terribly wrong. So what's great about the pharmacy system here is that claims are instantaneous. You know immediately if your drug is covered or not, whether it needs prior authorization, whether it's formulary, what your copay is. You know all that in 3 seconds or less. Sometimes you know that before you even leave the doctor's office. And that's something that's unique in the US healthcare system because claims usually take forever to get across. But pharmacy is one of the only parts of the US healthcare system that, there's really strict standards of what's submitted. Everything's very, very fast. And it was high tech before healthcare was high tech and before, Epic was out there selling EMRs. It's kind of an interesting way it started. And then it just evolved over time where there's more claims being processed, more pharmacies out there. They're now negotiating reimbursement off of various metrics. Pharmaceutical manufacturers started manufacturing drugs that got more and more expensive. They used their position in the middle to leverage those manufacturers and get money for themselves, which in theory should be passed along to their clients. But it was an IT product that evolved into what it is now, which is kind of essentially a bank that holds client dollars, pays the bills on behalf of clients. And a lot of PBMs will also have a healthcare aspect to it where they employ clinical pharmacists, care managers, care navigators to get people the care that they need, get people to the right place. But it started as kind of a cool IT product and just went from there.
Help me understand this bank aspect. A pharmacy benefit manager is essentially a bank.
Well, if you think about it, the PBMs are taking money on behalf of self-funded plan sponsors, taking money from pharmaceutical manufacturers, and they're paying it to pharmacies. So ultimately, they are similar to any insurance company. They're taking money, paying that to downstream kind of pharmacies that need it. And, I don't think interest is the way that they make money, similar to what a bank would do, but ultimately they're taking and paying money on behalf of plan sponsors, which is why there's a lot of these, ERISA lawsuits and people get in trouble because if you're not paying attention to what your PBM is doing, they're taking your dollars and they're keeping them
So,
when they shouldn't.
ERISA.
Yes.
All right,
Yes. That's
what's that in plain man's talk?
So ERISA is it Employee Retirement Income Security Act? I'll have to check later if that was actually correct or not, but it basically imposes certain requirements and standards on employers that, for example, they can't take your entire 401k and put it all on black at the casino. They need to treat your money as if it's their own. And those rules are pretty strict in the 401k space. And I think in the employee benefits space, it's becoming more and more a featured issue because there's more and more of these lawsuits where employees are suing their employers and saying, you didn't handle the money I paid into the to our employee benefit plan correctly, and I am suing you just like I would if you took my 401k and put it all in black.
Got it. And doesn't ERISA also cover financial advisors?
It does cover financial advisors. So financial advisors can be fiduciaries. It means they need to work in your best interest, not their own best interest. So it means, they're not just going to sell you funds that benefit them and don't perform well. Otherwise, they're legally liable. And it's a pretty high standard of care for financial advisors.
And so there's a fiduciary responsibility for financial advisors, but there's also a fiduciary responsibility for plan administrators.
Correct. Yeah, it's plan administrators ultimately are responsible for where their dollars go. And, they trust advisors such as insurance brokers to help them with that process. But ultimately, the buck stops with the employer of how their dollars are being spent.
Got it. And the thing that strikes me about that is, financial advisors, through their licensing and compliance, they're regularly reminded of their fiduciary responsibilities. And so they have things in place. But my understanding is if you have a company-sponsored health plan, you're a fiduciary. There's somebody in your
Yep.
business that has to act as the fiduciary who's not going through the licensing, not doing the, may not realize that responsibility and the exposure that they're opening the company up to.
Exactly. So it's an issue. I think there's more and more regulations that are aimed at helping employers get ahead of that. There's, transparency requirements, there's disclosure requirements. You're not allowed, we as a PBM shouldn't restrict employers from accessing their data so that they can shop out to see whether their dollars are being spent correctly, benchmark how we perform versus other PBMs. It's an important requirement. And as more and more of these large employers are coming under fire, everyone should take notice. Now, I'm not here to tell you you're going to be the next Wells Fargo if you don't use ServeU. I'm not here to tell you that. I think a lot of these lawsuits aren't necessarily getting legs, and I don't believe any of them have really resulted in anything material, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's more of them, and eventually one of these is going to stick. It
Okay,
just
so
hasn't happened.
here's where I'm confused. Help me work through this. Okay, so there's a fiduciary responsibility and there's a pharmacy benefit manager. When I'm thinking about the pharmacy benefit manager, they're just making sure my employees get drugs. What's the fiduciary breach that's causing the lawsuits?
So I'll use, for example, the one of the drugs in one of those big lawsuits. There's Johnson & Johnson and Wells Fargo, I think, are the ones everyone talks about. There is a drug out there called Aubagio. Aubagio treats MS, multiple sclerosis, butchering this.
Yeah.
So that drug is about $8,000,
Oh.
right? Expensive. Well, what if I told you there's a generic that, if you go to random pharmacy, use GoodRx, which you can use without any insurance at all, it's maybe $300 or $400. Great, right? Now, if you're one of the largest employers out there and you have over 100,000 enrolled employees, you should have some negotiating leverage, right? You should be able to get a better price than most, certainly a better price than someone who has no insurance at all on that generic Aubagio. Well, as it turns out, their pharmacy benefit manager was charging them, I believe, over $6,000 for this drug. You can walk down to the nearest, to Bob's drugstore that uses GoodRx and get it for $300. Why are they paying over 2,000% of what the price to an uninsured person would be? The employee argued that is because the employer breached their fiduciary duty. And because basically the employee is saying, look, I'm paying employee contributions to the self-funded plan. So in the self-funded plan, you're holding my dollars and you're using those to pay for my health care, and you're paying an egregious markup on this drug. So their argument was you're breaching your fiduciary duty with my money, because basically I paid into this and you're getting a really bad deal. So you're not treating my dollars like your dollars. You're throwing them away. So put simply, that's kind of, I think, the basis of where the issue was and where kind of these fiduciary, where the fiduciary word pops up all the time is in these cases where I'm getting a really bad deal because your contract with your pharmacy benefit manager is really bad and I can prove it. Then it gets really uncomfortable for not only the employer, but their advisors too.
That makes sense. I was thinking back, I mentioned I heard somebody on Rogan, and he was talking about some deal, and this is where I'm still confused, but it was some deal where, let's say I have a drug and I'm having, let's say it's a $1,000 drug, and the PBM says, hey, your responsibility is $500. They're either through rebates, kickbacks, or whatever, they're only paying like $100 or a couple hundred dollars for the drug. And basically, they've turned me and the patient into a profit center. And instead of driving prices down, they've driven prices up. That's kind of my convoluted understanding. Help me correct that. What help me fill in the dots.
Yeah, so rebates are a big part of the problem. Because if you look, there's a very smart man named Adam Fine with the Drug Channels Institute, and he talks about this all the time. But if you look at gross drug costs, so like the sticker price, like the MSRP of a car, it's a bad example now, everyone's paying MSRP. But there was a period of time where MSRP was not the price that you paid. You always paid a discount off this on MSRP, right?
Right.
So when you see quote unquote skyrocketing drug costs, you're looking at the MSRP because that's what patients see at the counter. But there are things called rebates. The rebates are on most branded products and most specialty products, so the really expensive stuff. Now, like your metformin that you pick up, that's like 2 cents a pill, there's no rebates on that, at least not to the plan sponsor.
Right.
But for these expensive things, like I'll use, for example, Ozempic. Ozempic has a rebate attached to it. That rebate has been known to be substantial. And essentially what happens is patient fills the drug, the copay is based on MSRP, right? The sticker price. And the rebate is paid sometimes 90 to 130 days after the fact. That goes to the plan sponsor. Well, it goes to the PBM, who then should pass it through to the plan sponsor, right? So let's say I paid, I'm just going to use round numbers, $1,000 for Ozempic. Let's say I got a $400 rebate afterwards. And let's say in that example, I'll use the same example as you talked about. Your coinsurance is $500. So the patient just paid $500. Plan sponsor just got a check for $400. Yeah, they only paid $100 because the rebate made up for that. Rebates are difficult to attach to a transaction because they're very secretive. Sometimes not even the PBM knows what the rebate will be until after the fact when they bill it. It is kind of a very weird dance that happens between pharma and large PBMs and small PBMs. But those rebates do decrease drug costs, but they do decrease drug costs way after the fact. And it's actually up to the employer of, in theory, they should be taking those rebate dollars and those should be used to decrease premiums to employees. But that's not always the case. And that's assuming the PBM is passing through the rebates. Because there are some PBMs that just keep the rebates or pay rebates to someone else along the supply chain. And then you see that quote unquote skyrocketing drug costs. But when you look at the net price of drugs, so when you take that gross price, you subtract the rebates, drug costs have been largely going down for the last 10 years or so. Not by much, but the net cost of drugs has been going down over time when you factor in rebates versus what everyone sees out there and what's reported widely on the news is that drug costs are skyrocketing. Now, don't get me wrong, there are very, very expensive drugs that are out there that are going to drive costs up. Like gene therapies are $1 million. But your average run-of-the-mill drugs that most people are going to take have been going down in price.
You know, there's an angle where I can see why the rebates went in through that channel. You know, so if we think of like a traditional insurance model, there are really a lot of states have really strict rules regarding rebates that can be promised. Now, Illinois is a little funny with the Chicago. I've actually read the legislation for that, And it's one of those things where it gives a lot of latitude for, hey, we'll do this and it'll be okay. And so I think they may have even used the word de minimis, to say, they left a lot of room for interpretation. But the point of that, we had a client that sold professional liability insurance, so we had to understand what we could and couldn't say or promise. And but I can see why the rebates would be going through the PBM versus the insurance company, because all of a sudden you start running afoul of all these rebate laws in the insurance industry that could really jam people up. And so I'm wondering if that's why they ended up over on the PBM side.
Yeah, and ultimately the PBM decides coverage. So I'll use, for example, there is a large PBM that is subject to a class action lawsuit because they decided to cover Wegovy and exclude Zepbound. So those are two drugs I think most people know. They both are GLP-1s for weight loss. They're the ones, the weight loss drugs, the topic du jour. CVS decided to exclude one in favor of another. Now, typically a PBM would do this to lower the cost. Right. If I have two products that I believe are comparable, and I go to, Eli Lilly and say, "Hey, Eli Lilly, if you give me a higher rebate, I'll exclude your competition, but you need to bring the cost of your drug down in order for me to do that." That's, I think, the basis of rebates and why rebates are paid to PBMs, because ultimately the PBM has control over what's covered and what isn't. So as a PBM, we have the control to say, we're going to cover Wegovy, we're going to exclude Zepbound, and then we're going to pick up some unknown amount of rebate dollars on the Wegovy. That's why we would do something like that. Now, there's a lot of criticisms to that I'm not going to get into, but at its core, that's what PBMs are supposed to do. They're supposed to use their leverage, say, I cover X million covered lives. I have a really large market for you to access if you give me this concession by making your product my favorite and excluding all your competition. What can you give me for that? And if the PBM passes that through to the employer group, that's a good thing, right? Because you're lowering costs. Now, there's the, hey, it's not transparent to the actual person at the counter filling the drug, but we can at least get started with lowering the cost through kind of these tools that are available. So it's leveraging pharmaceutical manufacturers. They pay you money in order for preferred placement of their products on your formulary.
Okay. So let's kind of put a bow on this with how business owners, based on what we just discussed, how is it that business owners can bring down the cost of their health plans without denying their employees coverage through the PBM?
Yeah, absolutely. It's, one of the things I like to say is if you're hearing a lot of is first you have to be engaged. You have to know what you're paying for, especially if you're self-funded. You need to understand the pieces of the system. And if your advisor is not explaining that to you, you need to find a new advisor. Because, even though only large employers are getting in trouble right now by not understanding their PBM contracts, that'll make its way down the chain. And ultimately, I'll use, for example, if you're currently filling a brand name Humira, right? That was a drug everybody knew. It was always on top claim reports. It's $8,000 a month, $96,000 per year. What could you do with $96,000 if you took that drug and filled essentially a generic version of it, a biosimilar, that's $700 a month? What could you do with $90,000? And especially if you're a small business owner, that's a big chunk of change. That's a couple FT, that might be a couple FTEs, it could be a piece of equipment, it could be an expansion. Even though healthcare is confusing and it feels like a lot of hand waving and I don't really know what's what, if you take a close look at your pharmacy benefit manager, and if it's one of the big ones, chances are there might be some savings. Or if you haven't looked at your contract in 5 or 10 years, if you look at that, that could be an area of savings. A lot of times what we like to look at is if you look at, gross profit, how much revenue do you need to bring in per dollar of gross profit? Let's say you have 20% gross profit margin. And I'm a numbers guy. This is why I take this approach.
Yeah.
Let's say for every dollar you bring in, you keep 20 cents of it. And you just put in a new PBM that doesn't cover expensive Humira, covers the generic version of Humira, the biosimilars that are out there. Let's say you just save $90,000. How much revenue would you've had to brought in order to make that $90,000 through top line? A lot, right?
Right.
You had to bring in five times that. So even though it might seem like it's complicated and difficult, I don't get this. I don't trust PBMs. I think working with advisors that are innovative, are willing to push the envelope, and willing to look at PBMs that you don't see on TV and don't see all over the news is the quickest way to deliver some value immediately that you can reinvest in your business. Every dollar you save on healthcare costs, you can either reinvest in your healthcare delivery system or use that to support your business, which is what you should be doing in the first place, versus worrying about how much you're spending on drugs. So if you go with a PBM that you can trust and a PBM that has your best interests and is transparent, that's one less thing you have to worry about. And you can use those savings on running your business and growing your business, which is what you should be doing in the first place.
That's awesome. Well, I always like solutions where I can grow profit without finding a new customer or cutting any heads.
Exactly. It's
Yeah.
exactly.
Well, Justin, this has been great. Thanks for sharing it. How can people reach you?
So you can reach me on LinkedIn. I am chronically on LinkedIn. I talk about this stuff all the time. So you can reach out to me on LinkedIn or www.serveurx.com. You can get in touch with us there as well if you want us to take a look at your PBM contract or if you have just any questions. We're ultimately here to educate. I'm not here to sell you. I'm like the worst salesperson ever. If you have any question, no matter how pointy it is, feel free to reach out and ask. I am more than happy to explain it in excruciating detail to you in a way that you'll understand.
Well, thank you, Justin. Appreciate you coming on Leaders and Legacies.
Thank you very much, Craig, and we'll see you soon.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show. And it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.